What's up, everyone? This is Mike Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. This week, I interview my beautiful wife, Adi Cashew, owner of Working Against Gravity, the absolute best nutrition consulting company in the game. This time, we're talking about getting bigger. After the last two podcasts that we did, we had a ton of emails and different messages from people asking about how to put on lean muscle mass. So we talk about training and nutrition for getting bigger the right way, certain myths associated with it, as well as different lessons that both of us have learned along the way. Before we get started, if you are a regular listener of this show and you haven't done so already, please put this episode on pause real quick, head to iTunes, leave me a quick review. I would really appreciate it. I'm going to invite any of you that are interested to call into a voicemail that I have set up and leave some questions. So then I'm going to play back your question on the podcast, and I'm either going to answer the question myself or I'm going to get one of my guests to help me answer those questions. If you're interested, the number is 801-449-0503. That's 801-449-0503. Enjoy the show.
King Brute Cashew, this is Christopher Michael Martirano. My question is regarding putting others first, how to become a better friend or boyfriend or husband, and putting those that you care about first, whether that's prioritizing something or analyzing things, remembering certain dates or anniversaries better. Curious to know your thoughts. Thank you, sir.
Chris, what's up, buddy? Thanks for calling in, man. King Brute, I like that. So to answer this question about being a better friend, loved one, etc., I'm going to get my favorite loved one to help me answer this question, my wife, Adi. What is your answer to this?
I'm curious to hear your answer, but my answer is how to get better at putting your loved one first. I think that there's like a flaw in the question to begin with. I think that it's really important actually to put yourself first, and not in the ways that make you selfish or hurt someone else's feelings or doesn't show them that you care about them. But really, if you take, like, it's important to take care of your own needs, and it will make you automatically a better husband or a better wife. I think that a lot of us get locked into these thought processes, like, I'm doing this for us. Like, everything I do is for us, or every single day I wake up in the morning, I think about what I can do for you, and you try really hard to do something for the other person or for us, and that other person maybe didn't even ask for it, and then you become resentful that they don't appreciate all of that stuff that you're doing for them. So you get in like this weird in between where you feel like you're doing so much for them and they're not appreciating it because that maybe that's not what they even wanted. But if you focus on, you know, being happy yourself and pushing yourself and you know, striving for your goals and trying to be a better person, being the best version of yourself is the best gift that you can give your significant other. I think the better that I'm doing in my life and the more successful I am and the happier I am with my body and my routines, the more you appreciate me because it motivates you to be that way too. So I think that both of us focus on being the best versions of ourselves for each other. Mm-hmm. And I think that's been one of the biggest shifts I've made since I've met you. And you've taught me that, you know, I don't always have to be about us. It can be about me. Mm-hmm. But you can take it both ways. Like, maybe focusing only on me is some people will be like, well, they might take that to the extreme. I mean it in the sense of like focus on being a good person, focus on being kind, focus mm-hmm. on being compassionate, and focus on getting, what you need to feel awesome about yourself. Mm-hmm.
That's a great answer. And I'm going to take a little bit different approach with it. I heard once, if you want someone to be a better friend to you, then be a better friend to them first, right? So if you approach your relationships by trying to provide value for that person, it will be returned to you
probably two to tenfold, right? The times in which I feel like you a D, like when I'm getting my needs met the most, it's like after I've praised you, or after I've, you know, organized a night just for the two of us, and I took all of the stress off of your plate. Like after I, when I do that kind of thing for you, then I get my needs met more than ever.
Yeah.
Right. So leading with that value, and really that could be like a selfish approach in itself, right? Like I know how you're going to make me feel if I make you feel great, or if yeah. I praise you, or if I do something for you. So always looking for what you can do for someone else can actually be the way to get what you want as well.
Yeah. The Joe Polish quote of, you're not entitled to anything unless you create value first. It would apply in that scenario. But I think one thing about what you're saying is, you got to make sure that you know what that person actually wants.
Absolutely.
First. So you can be doing something for them that they didn't even want. So finding out what it is that they actually want. Like Michael and I, it took us a really long time to even get to where we're at right now, where we can really understand how to get each other out of those moods based off of what we know about each other and what we know the other person needs. Like, I love getting praise from Michael, and it took a long time for him to really realize that that's one of my needs that I need fulfilled. I'd read a book that I still haven't read, but I know is really great on this topic. It's called The Five Love Languages, and talks about five different ways that people love and accept love, and it can help you figure out what it is that significant other is actually looking for, so you can give them what they actually need.
Boom. Hope that helps, Chris.
What's up, everyone? This is Mike Cashew, and you are listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. I'm with my gorgeous, intelligent wife, Adi Cashew. She's back on the show for a third time, and the reason is, the first couple times, we never really touched on how to actually get bigger, and she's helped, I don't know, you've helped hundreds, maybe even 1,000 people with that goal of getting bigger and gaining lean muscle.
Yeah, definitely less than I've helped people lose weight.
Sure.
We've definitely worked on helping people gain some size, for sure.
Well, thank you for carving some time out to spend with me. I'm stoked. No, seriously, we had a ton of interest in this podcast as we, put out some feelers a couple months ago, and finally we're getting around to it. Also, we are doing one of our very first live broadcasts of this podcast right now. So if you listen to this and you want to go see what we actually look like while we're talking, then you can go to the Brute Strength Facebook page and watch. We'll just pin it or save it to that group, so you can go back and watch it whenever you want. So this is
your wardrobe. We'll close it.
So this is mostly going to be me asking Adi a bunch of nutrition-related questions. But before that, Adi and I were talking beforehand, and we agreed that if your exercise and your lifting is not on point, if you're not signaling to your body, telling your muscles to grow, then it doesn't really matter what nutritional choices you're making. Right? You have to be tearing up muscle tissue. So to start it off, I want to give you a few key points to keep in mind when building muscle. So first, there are a few different types of training. There is power and strength building exercises, which typically, and I'm going to grossly oversimplify this. And also, you need to realize, I'm going to say some rep ranges, but there's so much crossover, and you can train everything at once. And this is not black and white, but I do want you to get a basic understanding of this. So I'm going to overly simplify it. You train for power and strength in rep ranges of 1 to 5, typically. You train for hypertrophy or muscle growth in rep ranges 6 to 15. Again, you can do both in both rep ranges, but those are the typical prescriptions. Then 15 and above is called local muscle endurance, and even like aerobic training. So the goal when you are trying to build muscle is you want to tear up a lot of muscle tissue. And so to do that, you have to have a high volume of training, right? High total reps per workout. You have to also, you want to send, you want to release certain hormones like testosterone, and you do that through very high intensity. So the first suggestion is spend more time lifting in the 6 to 15 rep range, going as heavy as possible. You can absolutely get bigger and stronger just doing Metcons, but it's only to a certain extent. And if you're a hard gainer, you may never be able to get bigger just doing Metcons, right? You may need to step back, you know, cut out the conditioning for a while and just lift heavy while eating a shitload of food.
Right. I have a question.
Yes.
So what about, what would you say for, I mean, let's say like a weightlifter or a powerlifter that's not necessarily ever going to get into the rep ranges of 8 to 15, and they're still gaining size. So is that just because of the style of training that they're doing, the exercises that they're doing, because they're probably staying more within the rep ranges of 3 to 5. I mean, they are going upwards of super high percentages of their maximal efforts, and they're doing lots of reps over time.
Yes.
But in one particular set, they might only be doing 3 to 5.
Right. Okay, so I said two things. One was the rep ranges to tear up a lot of muscle tissue. Mm-hmm. The second one was that hormone release, right? Right? When we do really, really heavy shit, we release a lot of anabolic hormones that make our muscles grow. Again, it's not super black and white.
Yeah.
But there, if you look at most weightlifters, they are not that big. Look at Travis Cooper. He's one of the best American weightlifters in, you know, decades, and he's really not that big.
Right.
You also, powerlifters and weightlifters, their main lifts, they're doing 1, 2, 3 reps, and anything over that's cardio, but they're squatting a lot of times 5 to 10 reps,
yeah,
right? And they're doing glute hams, they're doing RDLs, and really, you know, in our program like Brute Body or something like that, that's the same way that we train, right? We do the main lifts, usually a little bit lower volume, so we can make people more explosive and stronger, and then add on the volume and the accessories, because that's a lot safer.
Right.
So
you're right. Yeah. When you look at like the Chinese weightlifting team, they're absolutely jacked.
Yeah.
And they are putting a lot of emphasis on auxiliary work.
Right. So the last thing is recovery. The absolute fastest way to get bigger is to lift like I just told you, and then spend the rest of your day on your couch or foam rolling or eating or sleeping. That's literally the fastest way. Every bit of conditioning or extra work that you add on top of that is 100%, well, anything over, I would say, a few hours of low intensity cardio. Other than that, anything is going to take away from the speed at which you're able to get bigger. Again, you can still get bigger doing all of those different things, but if you want to get bigger as fast as possible, that's the recipe right there. There's definitely a place for, you know, doing low intensity cardio, doing Metcons, especially just to increase work capacity, right? To increase your recovery between workouts, between sets, your ability to just recover faster. But the biggest mistake I see people in the functional fitness space, especially CrossFitters, making is they're just doing too much work, right? They're doing all of the right stuff, but then they're also doing the wrong stuff, and they're sending their bodies too many mixed signals, right? We call that concurrent signaling, and your body just doesn't know what to do. So it does, you know, a bunch of things much, much more slowly. And at a certain point, when you've been training for 10 years, 5, 10 years,
right,
then you completely plateau unless you hit different emphases.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
So now we have a very good base for how you should train. With that said, let's start to dive into the nutrition. So what are, and take this however you want, what are the keys that you try to emphasize when helping someone put on size?
When helping someone put on size, some keys is, it's always going to be the first and foremost thing at the front of my mind is to have some level of consistency and compliance in your diet. If you're not consistent or across the board, you don't have a consistent calorie intake, you're not eating similar things, not necessarily types of food, but quantity and the amount of energy you're consuming in a day, it's going to be hard to know what's going on. So you need to have some level of consistency. And it's also important to go into gaining with the acceptance that it's going to be probably more uncomfortable than losing. So gaining weight and requiring you to eat beyond that feeling of fullness is, I think, I mean, I haven't gone through many gaining phases myself personally, but it's uncomfortable, especially for people that it's very difficult to eat. You know, I've definitely overeaten and then eaten some more. So mm-hmm. I know that discomfort that you feel from being super full and then still continuing to eat. And it's more debilitating than, you know, you can distract yourself if you're feeling a little bit hungry. If you're super full, your body's gonna have this response of, you know, I don't feel comfortable moving. It's gonna be hard to go and work out. Like, you're gonna feel lethargic. So knowing that you might have to feel uncomfortable eating a lot of food.
Right. Let's highlight this, because I think a lot of people, they may not be able to relate to what you just said, but most people, when they're trying to gain weight, take the approach, if it fits in your mouth, right? Like, get everything in that you can possibly pile in, and they're not tracking it, and they're not holding themselves accountable to certain metrics. So they're probably not hitting their protein goals and way overshooting their fat, right?
I think the more so than even that, when you're taking the if it fits in your mouth approach and you're just gaining by eating massive amounts of food. And some people are like, I can eat everything and I can gain weight, for sure. But you're also, in any type of gaining phase, you are not going to only gain muscle. Mm-hmm. There is going to be a certain percentage of that gain that is going to come from body fat, which is why you see in the bodybuilding community, or even in weightlifting, you know, you gain and then you cut. And then you gain and then you cut. It's like it's a balance. You have to go to and from. So if you guys, I mean, the majority of people listening to this podcast are concerned about performance, they're concerned about their body weight to strength ratio, all of these people. And if you're just gaining by eating a massive amount of food, you're going to put on a proportional more amount of body fat, and therefore your strength to body weight ratio is now going to decrease. So you might get stronger, but you're also much heavier. So it doesn't make sense to just eat massive amounts of food just because you're gaining weight. It does, it's going to require slow and steady progress.
I absolutely love it. Can you give people kind of a starting guidelines on, like, how much protein, how many calories they should eat, based on, I don't know, if they're a power lifter, weightlifter, CrossFitter, for different sizes?
In terms of, there's definitely going to be a wide range to stay between in terms of how much protein to eat. Calories in, calories out is definitely super important. When it comes to a gaining phase, a little bit different than cutting, you have a surplus of calories. So you want to know what your baseline of calories is. And you can, like, a basic calculation of that depends on your activity level. So if you are below average activity, which is, you know, you just have normal day activity, and that's all you do, you're going to take your body weight.
Like, no exercise.
Yeah. And you're going to multiply it between, like, 12 to 14 calories. And then you go all the way to the extreme if you're above average activity, which is a lot of the people listening to this. It's like 2 to 3 hours of activity, mm-hmm. 4 to 5 times a week, plus normal activity. You're going to take your body weight in pounds, and you're going to multiply it between, like, 15 to 18 calories.
Okay. Pound. So if someone's not working against gravity and they have someone changing their macros, what do you usually say? Start at the lower end and work up, or vice versa?
So at the lower end would be women who have a slower metabolic rate. Mm-hmm. And at the higher end, you're going to have men who are a higher metabolic rate. And then your more elite athletes, your leaner athletes who have a higher proportion of lean muscle mass, they're going to be at the higher rate as well. And then if you have higher body fat percentage, you're going to want to stay at the lower side of things as well.
Love it. How about, okay, so that's overall calories.
So if you want to go into a gaining phase, the first step I would do is just get your maintenance calories and then increase that by 10 to 15%. And then be consistent, track it, see what kind of changes you're seeing. And it really is so individual. So it really depends on like the rate at which you're intending to gain muscle. It's totally dependent on so many different factors. So whether what your genetics can, you know, naturally, if you're doing this 100% naturally, what your genetics can allow, like what you are, everyone has this like maximum muscle of like that you can possibly have, mm-hmm. you know, naturally. So, it depends how many years you've been training. Are you an advanced lifter? Are you an intermediate? Or are you a beginner? So a beginner who hasn't been training that long, and you can differentiate the three. Like a beginner would be somebody who's hitting PRs on like a weekly or biweekly basis. So you're making improvements in the load that you're lifting every 2 to 3 weeks, you know, every week. And you can see that tangible progress. An intermediate, it might be, you know, every couple months. An elite athlete would be, you know, you're only seeing progress in terms of the load on the bar every 6 months to a year. Sometimes it might be years. So those athletes are not going to see the same rate of muscle gain as a beginner athlete. A beginner athlete's going to see much more significant progress than someone who's been training for 10 years. It's the reason why you're going to see a professional bodybuilder on the stage 1 year, and the next year they might only be 1 pound or 2 pounds heavier. Mm-hmm. And that's because they're at this maximal muscle size, and the difference in the 1 to 2 pounds is huge for them. Like, that's huge. Or why a weightlifter only hits a PR, you know, once every year after they've been training for 10 years.
Right. I love that whole idea. So do you think in terms of gaining muscle, mm-hmm. do you think supplements are only beneficial for those elite people that need that very extra edge? And if not, then where do they fall into this whole equation?
You mean supplements for gaining size?
Yep.
Supplements for gaining size. Gaining size for me is you have to be in a surplus of calories. So I don't necessarily think that supplements are going to make the biggest difference if you don't just have a consistent surplus of calories, regardless of it, whether you're elite or beginner. I think if you have a consistent diet, then supplements will help you. Mm-hmm. If you've got the base down, you're consistent, compliant, your energy balance is good, you're focusing on your macronutrients and where your calories are coming from, you know, you're timing your food around your workouts, supplements will help you in that case. If you don't have all that other stuff down, whether you're elite or beginner, it won't make as big of a difference.
Mm-hmm. In terms of protein quality, there is, some people argue that when you're trying to gain size, getting a, you know, significant amount of your daily protein intake from whey will negatively affect your muscle quality. Do you believe that? What are your overall thoughts on like where you get that protein number from?
Yeah, I've never heard that particular argument before, so I don't know if I can speak to that. I'd have to, you know, look into that and see where that's coming from or see what studies that's being based off of. But in terms of,
I think Joe at Gold's told me that.
Yeah,
everybody knows a Joe at Gold's.
In terms of where you're getting your protein from, it's important to get proteins from like a varied amino acid profile. So, you know, you're going to have different amino acids that come from fish or from chicken or from red meat or from whey or from casein. You know, you want to get a wide variety because all of the amino acids are important. So you want to get a wide variety of different protein sources.
A variety. I love it. What do you think is going on with people? It is so common to hear, I've just tried everything. I just literally can't put on weight. I eat so much and I just can't do it. What's going on with those people? And given for anyone listening, there are obviously a lot of people that, you know, have either deficiencies or there's something chemically altered in them or genetically different that does make it significantly harder or impossible to put on weight. So we're not talking about those folks. We're talking about
just your average,
Joe. Yeah.
Your average healthy individual, what's probably going on, what I've experienced in most cases, is someone's like, I eat so much, like I never gain any weight. Well, they're probably eating like 3,500 calories in one day, and then they're so full from that day that the next day they're having like 1,300 calories, mm-hmm. or like 50, let's say 1,800 calories. So there's no consistency across the board. If 3,500 calories is a lot of food for you and you're feeling really full, I mean, have you ever had a meal where you just don't, you eat so much that night that you just don't eat until like, you know, you don't feel hungry until like 2 p.m. the next day?
And me, just, no, I can't relate to that at all.
I can relate to that. Where like, I'm just not as hungry the next day.
I totally get it.
Because you're just so full. You're still full almost from the mm-hmm. from the day before. And most of those people are going based off of hunger signals, and they're not tracking anything or being consistent. So if you've tried the eat everything and I'm still not gaining weight approach, that's a really awesome approach to start with. It's not the worst approach. It's, you know, make sure that you're including healthy food mm-hmm. and you're not just eating a bunch of junk. But, the next step after that would be to even track what you're eating so that you can be sure you're being consistent. So you have enough variables controlled that you can find what is actually causing results. So I'm eating 3,500 calories every single day. I'm not gaining any weight. Okay. Like, let's increase that. See where there is going to be a point where you start to gain weight. It might be for some right. people a lot of calories.
Right. Depending on how you're training.
Yeah. And just who you are and how lean you are and what percentage of body fat you have. And mm-hmm. and a lot of times when you're gaining weight, the energy expenditure like that your body puts into effect from gaining muscle is a lot. Like, it's using a lot of energy to build your muscle. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to be as much of a gain as you'd expect because, you know, you're training really hard, you're pushing the weights really hard, and now you're building muscle that takes more energy to...
So that's that's yet another stress that takes calories, that right. building process?
Right.
What is that called?
The synthesizing of muscle, I believe.
I like that.
I think. Don't quote me on that. Sure?
I think it's really common for people to, these people that think they eat so much, they'll eat a really big meal at dinner, right? And then they skip breakfast, they'll eat like a sandwich or like a regular sized lunch, and then they'll eat that big dinner again. And, you know, they talk about it. And I say they, because I've heard it literally a dozen or more times. They're just like, they don't do breakfast. You know what I mean? Well, if you're trying to put on weight, then you better do breakfast. You better like, or you're just going to have to stuff your face more than you can really comprehend in order to put on size.
I think that maybe they just don't really understand how much food is going to actually get you to that.
Right.
We went for dinner with our friend Steven one night, and he he is like a skinny guy, and at one point, Michael and I can eat for sure. We can definitely eat. So we had eaten, we're feeling full, we're feeling really good. And then Steven goes, you know, like, there's nothing I can do. I've been eating everything. And we had just eaten two meals with him, I think. We ate lunch and dinner with him. And I was just like, dude, I watched you. You ate like a bird. He ate like 5 chicken wings and was like, oh, I'm full. Mm-hmm. I'm like, no, like, you can't be eating 5 chicken wings.
I love it. That was hilarious. How fast should people try to gain weight? Like, and what's like the fastest you can gain weight?
I think it just goes back to if you're a beginner, an intermediate, or an advanced, at like training. What's your training age? Like, how long have you been training?
Mm-hmm.
And is there times where gaining faster might be more beneficial? Maybe, but I think in most cases it should be a slow and sustainable progress, or else, you know, it could turn into, I've seen people do like the gallon of milk a day and get lactose intolerance from that, and just create other issues from doing such extreme things. I'm a very neutral stance, so I'm pretty neutral on most things. So mm-hmm. I just like, you know, slow, steady, sustainable. Make sure you're being healthy, you're doing, you're practicing moderation, unless you have like a really, really specific reason you need to gain really fast, like you need to be a super to make the world team, like sure, gain really fast.
Mm-hmm.
But, otherwise I think slow and sustainable. I mean, if you're a beginner, it's going to be faster automatically.
Right. For the typical,
you know, functional fitnesser. They've been doing it 2 to 5 years. They're doing 1 to 2 hours of mixed modal, you know, mm-hmm. going back and forth between high intensity and low intensity and, you know, different movements and time domains. Then how does that answer change?
I think that I would be satisfied with like 1% of body weight change every month.
Okay. Got it. So I could
increase of 1%, maybe even like if you're maybe like 1.5, mm-hmm. but, or if you're more advanced, 0.5%, but
right.
That's a good rate of change. I mean, over the year, that's 12% mm-hmm. of your body weight.
Right. And so anything over that, you can assume that a more significant portion of that is coming from fat gain.
Even if you go 0.5%, like you're still going to have some fat gain. Mm-hmm. That's still going to happen. You can't avoid gaining fat as well. You're in a surplus of calories. So if you weren't gaining fat, you would be either maintaining or losing your weight. So you're going to gain some fat and some muscle.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Are there any tricks? So we've talked about, you know, it can be really difficult to eat this amount of food for a lot of people. Are there any tricks, tips, habits that you try to instill in people that want to gain weight? That could help people.
Yes. A few good tips. That's actually a really good question. So a few good tips would be to, So for someone who's dieting, I would say don't snack throughout the day because it's going to be a lot of small meals and you're never going to get to this point of fullness. So you'd rather have 2 or 3 larger meals and then you'll actually reach that level of fullness and it'll sustain you for a couple of hours mm-hmm. versus having a snack and then being hungry 20 minutes later. For someone who's trying to gain, it might be beneficial to have a bunch of snacks. Mm-hmm. So have 3 meals and then have snacks in between. And having a snack is not going to like throw you over the edge of like, I'm so full, I'm gonna vomit. It's gonna be, you know, whether it's a protein shake or some fruit or peanut butter and jelly sandwich, like whatever it is that you're gonna be snacking on that's lower in volume and not going to fill you up so much. And when you're having your meals, keep your sources lower volume if you're trying to, if you're having a hard time eating in that amount of food. So choosing, you know, rice and potatoes and starchy Snickers. Vegetables, not necessarily Snickers.
But you could,
I guess. But starchier vegetables, things that are going to pack more calories in less volume.
Which is contrary to what y'all usually teach, which is get as much volume in right. as possible because that's what's going to keep you full.
Right.
Very distinct difference.
Observation.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I pay attention. Okay. To wrap it up, what is the biggest lesson that you've learned from your coaching experience over the last 6 to 12 months?
My biggest lesson. Does it have to do with gaining size?
No.
What's the biggest lesson that I've learned? I get pretty amazed like every single week that it's always the same thing. Like it's amazing how individual all of this is. And in the last I'm currently studying for my master's in nutrition and human performance. And I'm learning that it is so incredibly controversial. Like nutrition is like all these people here might totally disagree with me and all the things I said, you know, like they're like, oh, she's totally wrong. I found this one study that totally says this. Mm-hmm. I found 3 studies that totally say this. And I mean, I can find 3 studies that agree with what I'm saying. And it's just, it's all over the place. And the biggest lesson I've learned is that you can rely on experience and every single person's different. And there is no right way. Like they're just for every single piece of research that says that you need to have 0.8 grams per pound of body weight. Like that's what a lot of the research says, because a lot of the research is on the average human being, the average healthy human being that participates in resistance training. But like, what does that actually mean? Like, what would we call Katrin, an average human being that participates in resistance training? Like, right. That's what I want to know. Is she considered an average human being that participates in resistance training as defined by that study?
Mm-hmm.
I would say that she's not. Like, or Jessica Lucero, like someone who trains four hours a day, 6 days a week, and is only doing resistance training in maximal loads up to 80 to 90%, sometimes 300 reps per training session. Is that person going to have the same protein requirements as the people in these studies? I'm not sure. I don't think there's enough research done on the functional fitness community, the weightlifting community, the powerlifting community, even the bodybuilding community. And there's more done on bodybuilding than any of the right. others. And I just think it's whatever works for you and whatever you're getting results from and whatever you're actually going to follow.
Right.
So, and I'm always going to say that. I'm always going to say it's about consistency and compliance. And, you know, there's no perfect way. So there's no reason to just get like super attached to one thing. Like there are certain principles that will remain true. You know, if you eat in a super excess of calories, you're going to gain body fat.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is true. But I don't think it's serves you to get caught up on the finer details. I think that you can relax a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I just wrapped up the podcast with John Berardi,
yeah.
who he said their company has worked, just PN has worked with 50,000 clients.
Yeah.
And then their coaches, their pro coaches alone, not just the people. So they've got 37,000 people that went through the coaching certification, and their pro coaches have worked with another 100,000. All they do is they say, what diet do you want to follow? And they help you follow it, because their belief is that all diets are good if you follow them, right? And if you're consistent on them. And the same beliefs that you have about including good foods, excluding bad ones, or not, rather than excluding bad ones, that's the same kind of stuff he's talking about. Yeah. There is no like bad diet.
It's so true. Like, The thing that boggles my mind sometimes is nobody just created this system randomly. It wasn't a joke. Like, they mm-hmm. didn't just be like, hey, I'm going to put this system out there and, like, see how many people I can get to follow it. Like, this person created this system and is putting it out there because it's worked for someone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, somebody has seen success from that, whether it's Atkins or keto or paleo or whatever it is, whatever, flexible dieting, IFYM, precision nutrition, whatever it is. They've put that program together and they're putting it out in the world, especially in the nutrition space. It's almost never just to make a dollar. It's usually to actually help people. And it's because they've seen results in some capacity. Whether you are that population is up for debate, but there is no like random system that was just created to see if we could trick people into following it. Like, the person that created it really believes that it works. So that probably means if you really do follow it, it's going to work.
Mm-hmm. Badass answer. Anything else you want to leave these listeners with?
You should listen to that John Berardi podcast. I'm going to listen to that John Berardi podcast. So Mike was so fired up after doing that podcast. And I'm super excited to listen to it. Yeah. And what else do I want to leave? The
open prep guide that you're putting out is
yeah.
When is that? Yeah, it'll probably be out by the time we release this. So go to workingagainstgravity.com and
it should be on the test yourself tab. If you click on that test yourself tab, there will be a landing page where you can submit your email to get our open prep guide. And that open prep guide is actually super bomb.
Mm-hmm.
It talks about, we have Active Life RX, who is going to be giving us all of our mobility needs, all of our recovery needs, everything that you need specifically for the CrossFit Open, as well as Brute Strength is giving us all of our training needs, all the tips and strategies, what is going to help you best prepare for the Open in that short period of time. You know, like, it's not going to be like, this is where you get to like fine tune things and some little strategies that are different than your average training. You're going to get from Brute Strength, and then you're going to get your nutrition advice from us, in a very beautifully put together PDF. So
nice.
One that you might be able to print and
yeah.
put on your table or add to your bookshelf.
Love it. Yeah. If you want to be the fittest in your gym this year, download it yourself, but don't tell any of your training partners, because we give away a lot of the secrets.
There is no secret. That's another huge lesson of the past 6 to 12 months. Like there's no secret, and holding someone else back is not going to help you win. So, share it with everyone you know. Okay.
Love it. Thanks, babe. This is great.